Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, bringing you the latest in mainstream and assistive technology news.
www.serotalk.com.
Sponsored by Serotech, makers of System Access, SAMNet, and SA2Go. You'll learn, you'll laugh, and you'll probably question our sanity from time to time. Learn about the latest in technology, trends, meet the mailbag, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 204 for June 23rd, 2014. I am Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Buddy Joe Steinbrenner. I'm Buddy Joe Steinbrenner.
I like it too.
We had Lisa Jo Salenkamp, and now we got Buddy Joe Steinbrenner.
Buddy Joe Steinbrenner, yes. Buddy Joe Steinbrenner here filling in on the podcast today. How y'all doing?
He uses his iGoogle device that he likes.
Yeah, the iGoogle.
You use that there iGoogle?
Uh-huh.
I use that Android.
Android, I like that.
Android.
That is a very German-sounding name to it.
The Android.
Android.
That's right.
Yes,
the Android. Yes, I actually, one of the funniest things I ever heard ever, when I was taking German in college, we were taking, one of the classes I was taking was like a conversational German, and they had this thing on Wednesday nights where you go, and for like 2 hours, you can't speak any English, you have to speak all German. And there was this one, she was like the widow of a German professor, and she spoke German with a very thick West Texas accent, and it was the funniest thing I have ever.
Wow!
The first time she did it, I thought she was, you know, trying to be funny, you know, just kind of goofing around and stuff. But then she kept doing it,
and you
it's like,
realize
I know enough French to
real.
Be able to say bonjour.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Off the rails in 20 seconds or less. We could probably write a book about that around here.
That's how we roll.
That's how we roll.
So what's with this new currency reader thing that the feds are going to distribute? We've seen this link, I think, pop up before, but it's kind of popping up again.
It looks like it's for real.
I think it's for real. But the interesting thing that I'm wondering about, though, is like, you know, it says that they designed it and so on and so forth. Why didn't they just... contract Orbit Research to make a whole raft of these things and instead of trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, because that already exists and has been proven in the field to be quite effective. I still have mine and would not part with it. Yes, I know you can do stuff like this on the iPhone. Actually, there is an iPhone app from the Bureau of Engraving
and Printing
for this, but it is not good. It is not good.
Right.
Crap. No, the good currency reader is actually called Money Reader.
Yes, from Looktel.
I think it costs $10. You know, but it's fast and it's accurate, and you don't have to do anything. You just like wave your phone over the bill, and it'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, and the iBill is the same. You just slide the thingy in there, press a button, and it'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So, I don't know why they needed to reinvent the wheel, but I will be along with Mr. Steinkamp at the National Federation of the Blind convention coming up very shortly, and the Bureau of Engraving and Printing is there, so perhaps we will be able to speak with someone there and ask these questions and more.
And if you can't, maybe Jamie will corner one at ACB after all.
Yes,
after all, it was ACB who brought the initial lawsuit, so it's a fairly sure bet that they will be there. So you'll get it one place or you'll get it the other place, and we'll have it.
So I don't know if I dreamed this, made it up, but I was thinking that these are going to be distributed through your network library service.
No, that's exactly right.
That's a true statement. Yes.
Yeah, that's a true fact. Yes, the library will be distributing these, and they will be free of charge on probably, my suspicion is they'll be like on permanent loan, very like the talking book players.
Right.
Right.
Now, one kind of neat thing is that maybe you can use this thing and identify 34 Benjamins to get a Vario Braille display.
Ooh.
Yes, the Vario Ultra. And I am hoping to get my hands on one of these as well at the convention.
I want one of these very badly, but I need to find 34 Benjamins.
That's always the problem, isn't it? Yes.
Yes. Well, the cool thing is they are, and for those who don't know what this is the new Vario Ultra Braille display / note taker from BOM. And they're going to offer Bill
transformable with a flip of a switch.
Yeah, connect up to 5 devices. And
now that's cool.
Switch between them easily. Yes, I'm sitting here with an iPhone and a computer and a Nexus and a Mac and no real easy way to switch between them connectivity-wise. This would be pretty darn cool.
And I've heard the usual lament of about how expensive this Braille display is, and yes, it's expensive. But let me give a bit of perspective on that, because yes, I agree that these things are expensive, and yes, I would love to see them get less expensive and come down in price. It's only $400 more than the Braille Edge from our friends at HIMS, but considering number one, you're getting the German-made Braille cells, which are kind of legendary in their quality and construction.
Yeah.
Second, considering that we're going to get lots of file formats that this thing's going to support, plus the 5 device connectivity over Bluetooth, along with connectivity over USB, and the ability to, it says that you can store documents on it as well as read documents from a USB drive, but what it doesn't say is it doesn't say how much memory is built in.
Right. And perhaps there wouldn't need to be a whole lot because most text documents or spreadsheets or whatever are fairly small anyway, and so you may never need to plug in a USB stick at all. What I'm curious about is nothing is said about speech, so I don't know if this has speech or if it is strictly a Braille note-taker / display.
My suspicion is no speech.
That is my suspicion as well, but we will certainly find out soon. Right. Yeah, it doesn't say. We'll find out.
Oh, the other thing, too, is I think that the Braille Sense is lots of plastic. Is it not, Jamie?
It's been a long time since I've looked at one, but yes, I believe that is correct.
The Braille Edge.
The Braille Edge, it is, but it feels fairly durable, although it's definitely not one of those things that like the old Braille Note. The idea that if you dropped it down the stairs, it would still run. You know instantly that that's not going to be the case with the Braille Edge.
Right. That's the other thing. The Super Vario. We need Super Mario. Yes, and we need the right. The Super Mario. Oh, we need the Super Mario theme. The one that from the YouTube video that's played on wine glasses.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Have you heard that? That thing is so cool.
I have.
It's so odd. I mean, he does that. He does a couple of other things, too, but that is just so cool. I mean, how much time did that take to set up? But anyway, this thing's made out of aluminium.
Aluminium. So, fantastic. Well, yes. we're definitely going to catch up with them at the convention and bring you all that info and so much more, no doubt. If you're curious as to see who we might be interviewing, and even if you have requests for, hey, you got to stop by this booth and interview these people, you can check out the NFB list of exhibitors right now using the link in the show notes. ACB's exhibitor list hasn't been released quite yet, and it usually isn't until around July 1st or so, but that will be coming shortly. But in the meantime, check out this link. And if there's somebody that you think we absolutely must speak with, let us know. resources@saratalk.com.
So, Ricky, do you ever have questions about what to wear at convention? This is kind of a cool post from this blog, Slate and Stylish, which you got to love the name, by the way.
Yes, I love the name.
I do rather the name, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do have questions about this. And what's interesting is that it can be different from show to show.
Yes, please.
ACB, for example, tends to be just a bit more casual than NFB, and CSUN is far less casual than either, at least if you are an exhibitor or someone whom you wish for people to take seriously.
Right.
See, and I want to be a little contrary on this because, okay, by way of full disclosure, I'm a very informal person anyway, and being a Texas boy, dressing up is is jeans, right? Jeans and jeans and the polo shirt, right? I mean, I don't do ties, okay? I didn't wear a tie to my wedding.
Wow. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, and this is where me and my buddy Rob have differences of opinion because he likes the whole dressing up in the monkey suit thing and all that stuff, and I just find it very awkward. But yeah, certainly know your audience and know what you're getting into and all that sort of thing. But I'm just thinking, like, how can I say this? No, I agree. Flip-flops are definitely not appropriate. However,
right.
You're looking at, especially talking about sitting in general session for hours and hours on end and getting up and cheering and going rah-rah and all that sort of thing, kind of in, slacks or dresses or whatever, that just sounds funny to me.
I was a little surprised that, not so much CSUN, I was a little surprised that the blindness conventions were casual at all, except for maybe President Maurer and maybe a few people. I just figured people would be not sloppily dressed or inappropriate, but just pretty comfortable.
Well, that's my feeling. I don't understand why it's not that way because you're standing up, you're clapping, you're cheering, you're jumping up and down, and you're going to also then worry about getting wrinkled. Okay.
Now the banquet,
For the banquet, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You should, if you're going to go to the banquet, you should dress up at least, presentably
nice
and that sort of thing. But
jeans or slacks maybe.
Slacks, button down shirt, whatever. But, sitting in general session, I'm just not convinced.
I think the thing to maybe keep in mind is, for one, the person who wrote this is very much a fashionista, if that is the appropriate word for that. But there is, you can take some things away from this in that we all agree flip-flops, not appropriate. I would say sweats, not appropriate. Of course, I think sweats are anathema and should not exist. I'd also agree
that hats indoors are just bad manners. I mean, that's how I was raised. You don't wear a hat inside.
Right.
And so I think we're really saying the same thing. She just happens to have a thing against jeans and that kind of thing. So it is really a matter of degrees. When you go into general session or anywhere that is a gathering of people, you should feel confident in what you're wearing and at least put a little bit of thought into it rather than, I got a t-shirt that says something very inappropriate on it and I spilled spaghetti on it at lunch, but I don't really care enough to go change and my pants have holes in them and that kind of thing.
Clearly,
don't do that.
Clearly that's bad. Yeah, I should probably not wear a shirt that says "This bud's for you."
No, I wonder if people would line up. Well, hey, you said I was free.
Okay. So I guess one of the things you don't have to worry about is maybe being too formally dressed up when you catch a ride across town, especially when you're at convention and you're going different places. What's all this flap about Uber that I keep seeing Uber on Twitter? And I sort of know what it is, but not totally. So, buddy, enlighten
me. We don't have it here. But my understanding is it's a ride-sharing service where you call for a ride and somebody picks you up and you pay them. It's slightly less expensive than a cab, but people are using their personal vehicles to do this and and so forth. Now, I think it sounds like a great idea. Mm-hmm. We can always use more ways to get from where we're going. Yeah, that's good. We could always use more ways to get from where we are to where we're going, and anything that will help with that, I'm all for. Especially given some of the problems that we've had with taxi cabs, especially with guide dog. Any guide dog user can probably relate to the whole denial of a ride by a taxi cab. Apparently, unfortunately, this problem doesn't go away when you take the taxi cab out of the mix and insert Uber or Lyft or a similar service like that. In a way, I'm not really surprised. Have either of y'all noticed, this is a phenomenon that I just don't understand, partly because I don't drive, but okay, have y'all noticed that, and I haven't seen any other object that people act this way about that people are like really, really protective of their cars. I mean, like I said on Twitter the other day, they're almost worshipful of their cars.
It is
which
weird.
Usually are junky
have
and have stuff
that.
Piled in the back seat. But yeah.
Yeah. But no, you cannot get dog hair in there. And they're even more like that than they would be about their houses.
Yeah.
I have seen people, oh yeah, you know, come on in. And I've got the dog and the dog's in the house. And I would think that could be a problem just because allergies, blah, 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 you know, dog getting hair on carpet and things. But when the person is, I'm not really sure, you know, is he shedding right now? Is he going to leave black hair? Because I have a white car and that's going to show up. And I'm like, yeah, how about the McDonald's cups that you have in your cup holder and the bags shoved under the seat and stuff, and your car smells like French fries. Why is that not a problem?
Why is that okay? But my little bit of dog hair that might, yeah, I just, you know, maybe one of y'all smart people with the psych degrees or something can explain this to me because I really don't get it.
No, I don't either. But in the case of Uber, and for whatever reason, I haven't heard about this happening a lot with Lyft. Lyft may have had a policy in place to begin with. I do have both services here and have just signed up for Lyft. Haven't tried Uber yet, but in any case, we have a post on Facebook where for Uber in Boston specifically, a person has been denied service 13 times over
a
year-long period. And she has probably taken lots and lots of trips, but 13 times still sounds like an excessive amount to me. So now Uber is looking into this. Of course, the problem is that people want to kill these rideshare services, namely the taxi cabs are not particularly happy about the idea. And there are things thrown in about, but what about, you know, how much is this regulated and how safe is it? And a little bit of scare tactics as far as I'm concerned. So they are using her words about, hey, Uber is denying service. And they're using her words to make their case for, they're using this for the case that, oh, yes, these services should go away, even though this still happens with taxis, even though it should not.
Lots. Probably more often than 13 times a year.
Yeah, I would think so. I've been very lucky in that it has rarely happened to me.
Since I moved to Erie, I have had one cab driver refuse me, and then he sent another cab and it was there within 5 minutes. Here in Erie, it hasn't been a problem. But in other places, in Dallas, it was terrible. When I lived in Dallas, it was very stressful. It was bad.
Odd.
Yes, very odd. I wonder if you could use your Fire phone to take a picture of the cab number or whatever, if you had to, you know, flag somebody down for, hey, I got refused, and it was this.
That's a good idea. So, buddy, do you think this Fire phone is going to have similar accessibility to the Kindle Fire HDX?
Amazon's page says it doesn't say that in so many words, but looking at the Amazon accessibility page, it looks very similar. It looks like kind of like TalkBack, except from Jelly Bean, sort of. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what really excites me is not so much what Amazon is doing now for accessibility, because that's just kind of they're doing what they have to do to be in compliance and that sort of thing, I think. I don't think that they're doing a whole lot more than they have to, considering what they did with the Fire TV. And like I say, it doesn't look like it's any different, really, from what's available on the Kindle Fire HDX, even down to you can choose from 5 different speeds of speech. 5?
5, I know, right?
5?
is that the way it is on the Kindle, or do you only get
3? That's exactly how it is on the Kindle. No, it's. I think it actually is 5, but I can already tell you that there will be people that will say it's not fast enough.
Right.
But what really excites me, though, is if they open up the Firefly stuff to third-party developers to take the object recognition and phone number recognition and all other recognitions.
Yeah, actually, they are doing that. There is an SDK which includes Firefly. And what I'm curious about is, do you have to develop just for the Amazon App Store, or is this, you know, here's your SDK and now go spread it everywhere?
Go forth and, yeah, is it going to be available on other Android devices or on Amazon branded ones only?
Right.
If the latter, it'll still be interesting to see what people do with it, because it has really exciting possibilities that I'm sure I don't have to tell anybody what those are, except by way of saying that Firefly, for those of you just tuning in at home, is Amazon's technology for object recognition. What they're going to initially do with it is object recognition, phone number recognition, email address, and that sort of thing. If you sort of show it an object, it will bring up information on that object and tell you how, hey, you can have one of these and buy it from us on Amazon. But there are so many other applications for that.
Yes, but how many of them do it well? I'm curious about Firefly.
Yeah.
And just seeing if it's going to do this where you kind of
any better get than anything
half
else?
A corner of the thing and it goes, hey, I still know what that is. Or, because you're right, there are plenty of these. There's Red Laser, there's, you know, even stuff for us like DigitEyes
well,
and that
sure.
kind of thing.
But, you know, is this going to be an improvement on any of those? And if what would be kind of neat would be something that would actually tell you, number one, if it recognizes something, or number two, if it doesn't recognize it, it can tell you how, maybe which
how
way to move the camera
take
to
a picture of
better
it more better. Yeah.
Center the image. Like, it looks like I'm getting the top left corner of the object. Move your camera down and to the right.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool. It would probably take a lot of, like, AI and whatever, a lot of work to program something like that. But I don't know. I think it's probably coming.
So aside from accessibility, I'm sure people are wondering why Amazon did this, what's great about it, what's maybe not so great. There's an article that does cover this, and it seems that most people are saying, you know, what's really wrong with this is the price.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tend to agree, except for one thing. The Fire Phone apparently comes with a year of Prime, which is great, and
well,
that offsets it just a little bit.
Well, it says for a limited time, but it doesn't say how limited a limited time is.
Right. So there's that. It's by the way, 32 gigs for $199, and that is, of course, with contract. Off contract, it's just about $700.
Yeah, $649, same as Apple's 16 gig iPhone 5S.
Right. And I'm not so sure people are going to want to be plunking down on that, because that's sort of the thing that's wrong with this right now, is that people are used to Android or people are used to iOS, but the Fire OS, while it is based on Android, there are some differences.
Different.
And so this is a tiny little ecosystem right now, and you're paying a hefty premium to go be a part of it.
Right. And then, of course, you're going to be all locked into Amazon, and Amazon's going to be throwing stuff at you to you know, buy this, buy that.
That's just it.
Hey, look, you're looking at this thing in your camera. Hey, look, you can buy one of those.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be hard to get away from that. And people may start to feel like, okay, so I paid you a bunch of money so that you
and you're
could
gonna throw, advertising
throw a bunch
at
of
me.
Your ads at me. Yeah. I'm not so sure about that. But there's some neat stuff about it. For one, the thing that I think is actually pretty gimmicky with the, here are four cameras aside from the standard front and rear facing cameras. And these watch what your head does and change the display accordingly. So I guess you can navigate menus and stuff by waggling your head around to and fro.
That would be great for somebody that's, you know, got you know, that's it's got paralysis or something and has limited range of motion in other parts of their body. That might actually be kind of a cool application for that.
That is cool. And I hope you're right. I hope it does turn out to have that unexpected benefit. But it seems kind of gimmicky in the whole Firefly thing. We're not sure how that's going to work. But the hardware is nice. Apparently, it's
the hardware is very nice.
Par with the Galaxy S5, only the S5 has like fingerprint reader and It has its own Samsung thingies to make it better, just as Amazon has its own Amazon thingies to kind of improve that experience.
Yeah, but, so these, but the Samsung phone also has a micro SD slot, and the Amazon phone does not.
Coming up after the break, we talk Apple rumors, ebook settlements. Yes, rumors, ebook settlements, and I complete my homework assignment from Ricky right here on Serotalk 204.
Now spell Serotalk. S-P-N. That is incorrect. The correct spelling of Serotalk is E-3-2-1.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet, with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the Accessibility Anywhere people. Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 204. And for those of you who listened last week, you will note that Ricky made a book recommendation kind of in our discussion. We've kind of had a reading list series going that we didn't really know we were going to do, but it just has sort of worked out that way. Summer reading, I should say. And she mentioned the book Room by Emma Donahue.
Oh, yes.
And I read this thing on Audible over the weekend, and I've got to tell you, that is one of the most compelling reads I've come across in a long time.
Yeah, that was a good one.
The voice actress who read the part of the little boy Jack is actually a woman. I believe her name is Michael Friedman. Yes, if you
she sounded like an 8-year-old boy.
Yes, she did.
If you do a kind of a search for the narrators, in other words, when you see the narrators of these books, you can click on the link and see other things that they've read. And more than one occasion, I've done a little detective work. It's like, okay, who read this part? Because it's so phenomenal. And the other link that I found from this person was she was doing a Southern dialect, but you can tell it's the voice. You can recognize the tone quality of her voice and that sort of thing. But she captures a 5-year-old child in a way that is just amazing with her read.
And this is, again, one of those instances where the story itself is wonderful, but the performance just lends it that extra sense of realism. And it's, you will be touched in some way by reading this, I'm sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, it's kind of interesting. I hadn't thought of it until, like, literally I woke myself up this morning thinking, my wife works in special ed, and there are a lot of issues in that book, like sensory overload and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And misperceptions or
yes.
That actually would be kind of interesting for a special ed person to take a look at, because I don't want to give the whole book away, but basically the jacket information is that this woman has been held in captivity for 7 years and she has a child. And for the first 5 years of his life, he spends that time in a room. That's where he and his mom live. And then they escape. And so to go from only being in one room for your life to the entire world being around you is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a very interesting transition.
So kind of speaking of transitions, it's a little hard to go from that to iOS.
To Apple rumors.
There might be some sensory overload for some people.
Yes.
Rumors.
There
I like
you go.
That. That's good. That's very, very well done. So because we can't live one day without trying to figure out something that Apple's going to do based on something they've already done. Okay, there are some tech journalists who think they can't. So what's this? What clues do we have?
Let's pull out some rumors from 2011 and 2012.
Yeah, why not?
2013.
You know, let's just recycle them.
Yeah, Apple's going to come out with a bigger phone. Well, you know, I don't know. I think maybe Apple may come out with a bigger phone. I'm not convinced they're going to do the whole phablet thing. You know, people are saying they're going to come out with two. They're going to come out with a 6-inch one and a 4.5-inch one. I'm not seeing it. I'm just not.
Right.
Sorry.
The iPhablet, iNote no. instead of the Galaxy Note. yeah.
No.
I do not want, because you already have the iPad mini.
Yeah. I can hear Joe in my head saying something about Apple cannibalizing its own business by cannibalizing the iPad mini and replacing it with the iFablet. But no, I'm not seeing it. It's not working for me at all. I think they're going to come. They may come out with a bigger phone, but it's not going to be a ton bigger, I don't think, because you can still operate the iPhone 5 with one hand. Get much bigger, you're not going to be able to do that anymore.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that people like operating it with one hand, but people are also sort of obsessed with big old screens right now. And so I will have to think seriously about what phone I buy if the iPhone gets much bigger, because I really hate big phones. I hate something Agreed. That is unwieldy in the hand.
Yeah. If it gets much more than 5 inches, I'm going to have to really take that into account.
Things are going to get problematic. But yeah, it seems bigger phone, because they looked at things in the code and they're seeing adjusting for screen
dynamic
sizes
screen,
and the like.
Dynamic screen size adjustment, dynamic adjustment of resolution to fit different screen sizes. Okay, I can. Well, and even if they come out with one bigger phone, a feature like that makes a lot of sense. It means that you're not going to have to, you know, provide multiple icons for things, one for a 3.5-inch screen and one for a 4-inch screen, so forth. So even if they come out with one new size, you've still got the 4S at 3.5 inches. You got the 5 and the 5S and the 5C at 4 inches. And then you've got whatever the next iPhone is at whatever size it is. So, you know, even if they only come out with one extra size, this particular thing does not point to multiple sizes of iPhones being released.
But maybe all the more reason to have an iWatch if they do make these big old phones. You really don't want to be taking that thing out of your pocket now. Mm. So
yeah, well,
why not?
What have I been saying for a couple of years? I'm waiting for the iBag phone.
Yes.
Or the Android bag phone.
Either one would be absolutely fantastic. I would totally go for that. Just for the retro nostalgia kind of thing. But iWatch.
And you can have it with the dial.
The dial. Except for QNC coming in a firmware update later this second.
That's right.
iWatch, though, looks like it may finally be time for that. And this is kind of an interesting article because it does talk about, so why is it time for this now? You know, why not before? And if everybody loves this concept so much of a wrist wearable, then how come a bunch of people aren't buying the Galaxy Gear thingy or the Pebble, all those things? And the answer, it would seem, is that, well, they haven't quite gotten it right yet. And this is what Apple does well. Some may call it borrowing liberally or copying, or this is not innovative or whatever. But I think especially when it comes to fashion, which is important for a wearable, and when it comes to user interface, what Apple tends to do is, yeah, people may have done this before, but they didn't get the integration quite right, or they didn't get the look quite right. We can make this a trend, because this is what we do. We produce pretty shiny things, and we make sure that they work inside the ecosystem seamlessly and are friendly. So it looks like the iWatch, this probably will be the year of the iWatch. I'm down with that. I don't think the Apple actual television set is ever going to come.
No, the Apple television. I'm going on record as no Apple television set.
Yeah,
I'm going on record with that. No Apple I don't care what.
Watch us be proved wrong in September.
Yes, Gene Munster's been predicting the full on Apple television set since like 2010. And he still wants it. I'm saying no, nope. Don't see it happening. Don't see him doing it.
So we can borrow a possible Sarah Sarah, I'm sorry, a possible triple click home title that we didn't use and say, I call shenanigans on that.
I call shenanigans on Apple television set. Yes, yeah. Very much so.
That works.
I also call shenanigans actually on, you can upgrade the iMac memory if you want to.
Yeah, if you buy the lowest end iMac, the memory is soldered on, you can't change it. I'm not a fan of this.
No.
In a way, I can understand it for things like the MacBook Air, because, you know, they're trying to make it as small and light as possible. At some point, you can make things only so compact before you have to say, like, you're not going to be able to open this up and change things easily. But on a desktop machine like the iMac, I don't like this. If you can, spend the extra couple $100 and get the next model up, seriously, because, you know, with that one, you can at least upgrade things and change things.
Well, maybe the reason, if it's possible that you can't, maybe they just didn't have time to worry about that right now because they're too busy settling a court case, finally.
Too busy giving away money. Yeah.
That's it. Cha-ching. Yeah, that's right. They're broke by now.
Yeah.
No, they're not. But they did finally settle
Apple
the
has
e-book
more
case.
Cash on hand than the U.S. government, I read somewhere.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that quote.
Wow. But yeah, they are settling this ebook case that came about because of price fixing. And so now they're going to be throwing millions of dollars at people, which basically probably means here's $1.42 for like a bunch of people. And it adds up to millions.
Right.
But, you know, no, consumers are not going to get a whole big bunch of money. But this is what the settlement is doing.
Coming up after the break, your feedback, history of talking books, and we remember the passing of a musician in our community right here on Sarah Talk 204.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it again. I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 204. And I see Mailbag over there packing. Mailbag
yes.
is getting really excited for NFB convention.
Mailbag is, mailbag bag.
There you go. Does the mailbag just pack itself?
Itself.
How does that work?
I'm not sure how that works, because if it's already full of stuff, which it is in this case, pretty lightly. Oh, and look, mailbag's rolling over on its back. It looks like it wants a belly rub because it's all full of stuff. So we'll do that. Here we go, mailbag.
Oh, gross. That was... That was nasty.
That was a big old nasty belch.
No, that was gross.
That was not necessary, mailbag. That is, you got a healthy microbiome and all, but you don't need to show that off.
Some mailbags just have no manners.
Agreed. But the people who call into us do, or at least they have interesting comments.
They do.
Nobody has yet belched on a... on an iReport, and that is not, by the way, an invitation to do so.
No, please
do
not.
Let's get right into this first bit from the mailbag, and this comes from Aaliyah.
Hey, Sarah Talk. This is Aaliyah Dudley calling in with a bit of a podcast title suggestion. As I'm sure you've probably heard lately on Twitter, of the Amazon Fire Phone. And I was joking around with a friend of mine, and this kind of totally came out by accident, but I thought you guys would get a kick out of it, as I know you guys like to have some fun on your podcasts. So Amazon has the Fire Phone now, the Amazon Fire TV, and the Kindle Fire. So we thought that was an awful lot of fire. So we were thinking, and we're wondering if, you know, when you get a text message on your phone, if it's one of the new Amazon phones, would you then have a Hot Pocket. All right, I'm done. I hope I haven't broken any trademarks or anything like that, but I thought it was a kind of cool joke. Good job with the podcast, as always, and look forward to hearing more from you guys.
Yes, Aaliyah. Although I gotta say that, you know, the Hot Pocket thing. Well, no. See, I think what that's no. You've got it. You're sort of on the right track, but sort of on the wrong track because no, the Hot Pocket is going to be a case for the.
Oh, that's Kindle what you Fire. Put your fire in.
That's what you put your fire in. You put it in a Hot Pocket. Yes, absolutely. So keep an eye out for that with apologies to whoever owns that trademark.
I'm sure.
Yes, there will be different
sizes of
Hot
Pocket. Does it have a crisping sleeve?
Yes.
Keep your device nice and crisp.
And
here
crispy,
you go.
Yes.
Is it a good idea to microwave a Kindle Fire in a Hot Pocket?
In the Hot Pocket. No. Oh,
wow. Yeah, probably not.
By the way, I think that perhaps the Kindle Fire people missed a golden opportunity because we've got OK Google, we've got Hey Siri, we've got Hi Samsung,
Hi Galaxy,
that's what it is, Hi Galaxy. So, you know, really the Kindle Fire should have ready, aim, fire.
Nice.
I love it.
Yes.
Next up. In slightly more serious news, we have an iReport from Janine Lineback talking about the story on Google last week.
Hi, this is Janine Lineback. I was calling to comment on Sarah Talk Podcast 203 in regards to Google accessibility or the lack of Google accessibility. I agree that the article being discussed on the podcast is very general. But the issue that we're trying to address is the fact that Google Docs and Google Apps are now being used widely by schools, universities, and employers, and this affects our ability as blind people to partake equally and effectively in those areas when it's not accessible at all. Thank you, and I agree that all the other companies also have their issues. So I will end here now and say a great podcast, guys. Keep it up.
So there you go. Yeah, this is becoming quite common for Google Docs to be used in education, employment, all over the place. This isn't just, hey, we need something different than Word to do our word processing. It's actually becoming a pretty useful productivity tool if you have access to it. And there has been the, well, if you just use NVDA and Firefox, then you have some kind of decent access to Google Docs, although it is not perfect. Mm. Or yeah. Yes,
one more
a
thing
Chromebook,
to carry
you
around.
Could do that.
Yes.
Just to be able to have access to this one thing that I really need, I've got to have a whole other device, which is kind of not fun.
No.
And that's, I'm really hoping that just as we've seen major strides in accessibility for Android, we're going to see this same sort of thing with the other Google services.
Yes, please. Google Gmail, I'm looking at you.
There you go.
Google Groups,
apologies,
I'm also looking at you.
Apologies, by the way. It looks like Janine's file broke up just a bit. There, perhaps she had questionable reception, or maybe she was calling from an iPhone. What do you think, Lynn?
I'll try to make this brief. This is Lynn Tatum again. I'm listening to Sarah Talk 202, I believe. And I just had to say, bravo, Joel and Ricky and all of you, really, Jamie too, I think. But I had to say, oh my gosh, the blind community is just so ready to just jump on something. I mean, you can't express an opinion. Give me a break. The iPhone absolutely stinks as a phone. I am not unhappy or ashamed to say that. I have everything else is beautiful. GPS, reading books, listening to radio, you name it, music, it's all beautiful. You get to the phone part of the thing, half the time it doesn't want to call. And Siri is not quite on it. Sometimes he doesn't understand what I'm saying and all of this other stuff. Can we not just take the good with the bad? There's nothing wrong with saying that there are flaws with a device. My gracious, we've got it with Windows versus Mac. blindness technology versus mainstream technology. Do we always have to have the this and the that? I love my iPhone, and I would not be without it. But I do agree with you, Joe. It completely, well, to put it colloquially, it sucks as a phone. So those are my thoughts. We're all entitled to them, and I'm going to continue listening to your podcast. But thank you for your thoughts so far. Take care. Bye.
All right.
Point proved.
I don't know that I'd quite go as far as Lynn in saying that the iPhone sucks as a phone. A lot of her complaints seem to be centered around coverage issues. And I've actually heard this, especially with AT&T in New York. I've heard that AT&T in New York and so forth has some real coverage problems. I don't know how much of that is the iPhone and how much of that is just coverage. As an actual phone UI-wise, like I say, again, I wouldn't go as far as to say that it sucks. It certainly takes some getting used to. One thing that I have found helpful is to set typing to touch typing. That way, when you're on the touch tone pad, when you lift your finger off of a button, it presses the button.
It automatically does it. Yeah.
I have my typing set to that, you know, all the time. I think that typing with touch typing is a little faster than the double tap or the split tap. But it's especially useful, I think, when you're talking about dialing with the telephone keypad. When you have to enter touch tones on like an IVR or something, that's a little bit of a problem because you either have to have headphones or you have to be sure that your phone goes into speaker when you tilt it away from your head. And by the way, people tell me that this is specifically a voiceover specific feature, that sighted folks don't get this. When they take their phone away from their head, it doesn't automatically switch over to speaker mode.
Wait, what? Really? Then yeah, what is the proximity sensor for? Just to keep it from not pushing buttons
with your cheek, I guess.
And stuff, but
I think it's a pretty darn useful feature myself, and I'm sorry that the sighted folks don't get it. However, the accessibility team thought of it in relation to being able to use the keypad while you're on the phone. I thought was kind of neat, but I just assumed that it was for everybody.
I did too, but I guess now that I think about it, it would be hard to switch to speaker if you take it away from your head and voiceover still coming out of the earpiece,
right,
and you're looking for the speaker button, and it's
exactly fine because to get to the speakerphone button, you have to hide the keypad, right? And then after you hide the keypad, then you have to find the speakerphone button, and I cannot remember where it is.
No, right. I can't either. I have to do it so rarely, but wow, that is interesting. Learn something new every day.
Yeah, I had automatically just assumed that it was a feature for everybody. I think it should be, by the way. Memo to Apple, that should really be a feature for everybody.
Yeah, y'all do that.
Resources@sarahtalk.com is the email address to use. Remember to go to our show notes page and look at all the articles, and you can leave a blog comment over on www.sarahtalk.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/sarahtalk. Leave an iReport on iBlink Radio. Either your iOS or Android device will certainly work. Call us on the Blab Line, 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout. So a couple of stories here, a couple of links, actually. The History of Talking Books from both the AFB and from the American Printing House for the Blind. And the APH link is not just talking books, but basically a lot of things.
Big old history.
Man, it's fun. I love reading this stuff. Yeah.
I was really fascinated by learning why American Printing House was called American Printing House, because it actually did start out printing things, specifically raised line type books,
they called it.
For the blind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they changed over to like Boston.
I wonder
line
how many
type
books got printed like that.
I don't know.
Didn't they say the first, like, that one of them was like Paradise Lost or something? No.
Something.
Right.
I believe they did. Not in that article in particular, but I believe that is correct. And they began doing that in the 1800s. It's kind of interesting. The Civil War disrupted a whole bunch of stuff
because
they had gotten the funding to do all this stuff and made promises. And then, oh yeah, we're kind of fighting a war right now. So we got to think about some other stuff.
We can't give you no money right now. And blind people don't have the weight.
We don't like you at the moment. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's also interesting to think that, yeah, Braille was not officially the official written language of blind people in the U.S. until like 1933 or 34 or something.
That is amazing. They did start producing some Braille books before but
there was also like
in
New
conjunction
York,
with.
Yeah, like the Boston Line Type, New York Point, and some other embossed thing. And there's an interesting article called The War of the Dots, and I forget where it is, but I have seen it. But there are a couple of really interesting sort of articles about sort of the history of how Braille came to prominence and so forth in this country anyway. Because it was not always so, friends and neighbors.
No, indeed, it was not. We also have an article here that was, or a link rather, taking this history from the perspective of the AFB. And some very interesting stuff in there as well. Lots of things that you can
actors reading talking books for blind people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Old readings, old recordings. Always fun to listen to those. Kind of miss the days of the old crackly records.
Yes.
Yes. And even some of those actors have that certain accent that we were talking about outside the podcast and have mentioned a couple of times here when we talk about things in the 1930s and the sort of inflection and accent that they had then and the
late, like I'm thinking of the late great Alexander Scorby right now.
I should listen
to him read the telephone directory.
I know.
Yeah, he had it and he was fantastic. You know what's really interesting is that, again, a perspective thing. When he died in 1985, he had read over 400 talking books. And so, of course, you know, they named the Scorby Award after him and so on and so forth. And that was 400 talking books over the course of, you know, what, 40 years or something?
A long time. Yeah.
Okay. And then you have...
In a time when doing retakes was not as easy
as
it is
today.
Right.
But then you've got, like, Scott Brick, right? Who's only been recording since the late 90s, like 98, 99, something like that. And he's recorded over 500 books.
Yeah.
And I think that is it. Like you said, Jamie, in that retaking things.
And the editing.
Editing is so much easier now than it was in Scorby's time.
What was it? It used to be like, I think it was 15-minute blocks that they would have to read. And if there was a mistake,
do it over.
Then they had
to back because it was like the one side of a record or something, probably like the one side of a transcription disc or something.
Yep, I believe that's right. Anyway, go to the show notes and just read to your heart's content. There's way more there than we can actually talk about, but definitely a lot to see.
You know, I'll bet you we could ask Mitzi Friedlander. She'd probably be able to tell us.
Because
I'll tell you what, she's still reading. I thought I had read that she had gone into retirement, but I guess she came back and she's still doing stuff and she sounds great. You know, she's like in her 80s, but she still sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Although, interestingly, she, again, has the accent, but actually doesn't have it as much.
Yes, she
does. In her earlier stuff, she had it, but she doesn't as much now.
It is there faintly,
but it's not as much. You can definitely tell it's her, but, you know, and she's been recording since the 50s anyway.
I'm following Bob Askey on Facebook,
me too.
Which is kind of funny.
He doesn't hardly post.
Yeah, me too.
He friended me. I'm friends with Bob Askey. Oh.
That's
I know.
Great,
woo,
man.
Me too.
Lonesome Dove. I'll never forget reading that with him.
Talk about a great voice.
I forget
he
how many flexible discs
fantastic.
That was.
I wish I had a voice like his.
I know.
He is awesome.
And you know, you got it. We talk about the Audible books. You need to listen to the samples before you buy, because you can get some great stuff and you can get some stuff that's really bad.
Boy,
isn't
that the truth?
Not good.
It definitely covers the
gamut. A lot of it's very good, though.
Yes, most of it, I would say, is quite good. Speaking of things that are quite good, there are some talented musicians around as well. And Greg Brayton was one of those who just recently passed. People that work over at ACB Radio are familiar with his work. He did a lot of the jingles and stuff that are actually still used on that station. I know that our own Patrick Perdue considered Greg a mentor and a friend and learned a lot from him We have a couple of links here that perhaps we'll just let Patrick play a couple of short samples of some things from Greg right here. And so you can see from that that he is an extremely talented guy, and he will be missed greatly in the community. I went to his website, and I think it's already not there anymore, if I'm reading correctly. I was just trying to figure out if there's a way to kind of along condolences to the family and that sort of thing. We'll see if we can find out any information, and if possible, I won't make any promises, but if possible, then you might find something in show notes. It's always hard to lose a talent.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but he did a great number of things for this community and really inspired a lot of people, so he will certainly
And again,
be
at
missed.
A time when multi-track recording was not as easy as it is today, and some people still consider it a challenge, but my goodness, I'm sure probably used tape and spliced it and keyboards that you got to memorize the sequences. At least you have had menus and actual buttons, and now everything's touchscreen, which makes things a little tougher. But, wow, I even did a little bit of that back in the day of memorizing the menus on my keyboard, had a lot of Braille notes, and did just a tiny bit of sequencing, multi-track recording on the keyboard itself. So it's doable. Well, that's going to wrap up the news portion of our podcast, but I am going to visit next with Joshua Loya and his colleague Mario about some martial arts for the blind. How does that work? What's the purpose? That sort of thing, and how can you get into it if you're interested? We talk about all of that coming up here in just a bit. Ricky, you and Joe are headed to convention. Probably as people are listening to this, you will be on your way or there. So we'll hear a lot of stuff from you.
Oh, yes. We'll be bringing you coverage from the show floor, and I suspect for those of you who are fans of food, and shouldn't you all be, we'll be bringing you an EOL Noms edition from Orlando. So certainly stay tuned for that. And shortly after that, Jamie's going to go to Vegas, baby.
Yeah.
And you can record just how accessible the slot machines are, because okay. I think people are very curious about that.
I will work on that. We are going to do the Star Talk podcast is going to take a little bit of a hiatus for a week or two, but that is because we're going to be jam packed with convention coverage. So nothing's going to go away. Trust me. In fact, shove too much at you. You can't quite digest it all, and we don't want you to lose stuff. So we're going to kind of try to be gentle with you a little bit here in the next couple weeks or so. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Thank you for your feedback. Remember, at the end of the podcast, Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us one more time. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Joining me on the Serotalk Podcast Network today are Mario Schaap and Joshua Loya. Now, Joshua is no stranger to the podcasts. Joshua, first of all, welcome back and glad to have you here.
Thanks. Glad to be back. Love listening to the podcasts on SBN and a lot of really good information resource.
Now, anyone that knows anything about Joshua knows that one of the things that he is into is martial arts. And Mario, I would like to first welcome you to our podcast as well and talk to us a little bit about these techniques that you have developed specifically for the blind community.
First of all, thank you for having me today. And I'm delighted to be able to talk to you about our program. The techniques that I've developed, or I don't like the term developed, I think more about compilation and recording and documenting my findings, is basically, it comes from the karate, or from the traditional karate martial art, or the stand-up martial art, which is called karate. And then we're using also self-defense components out of the traditional jiu-jitsu and the modern jiu-jitsu. And so we are very much in line with a lot of Japanese karate forms and applications. And then we have basic drills that are specifically geared towards people that have disabilities to improve their mobility, their balance, their stamina. And we have self-defense components that are absolutely fit for people that can't really move as well or don't have the ability to, you know, sense the attacker coming at them. Hence, it's geared towards people with vision impairments. There's a lot of you know, detail in what we do, obviously. But generally, I put it this way: I use karate for development of strength, balance, mobility, and I use the modern and traditional jiu-jitsu for self-defense components.
Okay, so not only is it self-defense, is this also, can this be used for exercise?
It's exactly that.
Most definitely. I mean, it helps a lot with balance and you know, that sort of thing, because that's a big piece, and flexibility and
awareness.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of stuff where, just put it this way, you know, I do teach jiu-jitsu as well, which is the best martial art for people that are visually impaired and, you know, they have a disability. However, you really can't practice it by yourself. You know, you always need a partner. And what we have through the karate curriculum that we include in our program, people can go home and they can practice. They can practice their little routines. You know, there are a couple steps that they have to do. And therefore, they actually exercise 10, 15, 20 minutes a day. I have one lady, she wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning because she needs to practice whatever, a kata or a form, and she spends maybe 2 hours doing that. So it's definitely for exercise.
And it's also exercise that, regardless of your fitness level, it'll still help you improve.
Okay, that's excellent.
You know, I live a pretty active life, you know, myself, and then there are people that, you know, maybe they have more than just blindness they're coming in with. You know, maybe they're on blood pressure medication or whatever the case may be, and they have to take things a little bit more slowly, but they can still do the movement, and you can ramp up or back off as your health needs require, and yet it's still an improvement. Mario's curriculum challenges me, you know, even at my, you know, more active level, and it also is a challenge and still appropriate for somebody who's just coming in, who's nowhere near as active.
So is there a lot of fear? Like, I mean, you know, when you think about physical contact and you don't see it coming, do you have to overcome a lot of that or see people deal with a lot of that?
I think you're asking a question that, as Josh will probably tell you, that is something in daily life. The fear that you, mm-hmm. that you describe right now starts when these people walk out their door in the morning. They don't know where the curb is. You know, they don't know if someone parked a bicycle in front of the house, because they, and Josh is probably concurring with me, that they have their specific routines. They know how many steps it takes to go to the next, like, checkpoint. And then from the checkpoint, mm-hmm. there's another certain steps. If something gets in the way, or if it's, like, raining heavy and there's, you know, debris everywhere, that's pretty scary. And so what, in our school, in our martial arts school, the fear is actually not factor that will stop us from exercising, but rather it enhances.
I think, though, when people first come in, and, you know, part of it is just even knowing that it's possible, they're like, wait, there's a martial arts program here, there's a self-defense class, the community center, you know, wait, that's possible, and they kind of come in and they check it out. And it, a lot of it is, how well have you adapted to being blind? I mean, when I first lost my eyesight, I did have a lot of that fear, like Mario's talking about, and part of it is you learn adaptation. Tekkyo Jitsu, which is the name of the curriculum, is adaptive techniques. I don't know what the exact...
It's the art of adaptation.
The art of adaptation. And so part of that is, too, for us as blind people, some of us have different types of adaptations. You know, I have pretty good hearing, but it doesn't matter how good my hearing is, because when I have a really bad head cold, I can't hear anything. It's mm-hmm. really, you know, yeah. I'm not going to be able to hear that parallel traffic to be able to cross that street safely. And so... Right. In the one sense, yeah, you have the fear, but also once people realize that it's possible and learn to trust the instructors and their fellow students, you know, because we have blind and sighted people that train in that program, both, you know, then they start to realize, okay, this is a safe place to train. You know, I'm not going to get hurt here. We don't beat you
right.
up. And, you know, we have, just to make sure that there aren't collisions, because, you know, blind people, you know, no matter how good we are at traveling, you know, we've all run into our friends who are blind or you know, partially sighted or whatever. And so, you know, some of the sighted people that are, they're training with us also help make sure there aren't any collisions when we're doing drills and things like that. And the more time you spend, you start realizing how much safer it is. Like Mario was saying, it's actually in some ways safer training than it is, you know, walking out there.
Give us a couple or three specific adaptations. How does the curriculum change for someone who's blind versus someone who can see? And I realize you could talk for an hour on that, but just go ahead and give us a couple.
For one, the concept of connection that Joshua just addressed shortly is basically our most important concept. The connection, and that's in line with distance. So the biggest problem that there is in a martial art, especially in a traditional martial arts, everyone does these specific routines and the partner is a couple feet away from each other and then they step in and punch, you know? Those things they cannot be practiced with a person that is visually impaired or even has other disabilities. So what we do is we go forward to a place where we connect. And that might be a hand on the shoulder, that might be a wrist to wrist, that might be a hold. And so we actually use it as a driving module. All right. So that's the one thing that I find that we differ a little bit from many other traditional martial arts. Just bear in mind that there's jiu-jitsu and there's a lot of things or grappling arts where connection is everything. So, I'm trying specifically to mention about, you know, karate or the old school karate. That's what we're trying to stay away from far distance. We want to connect. We want to get him. We want to hug him. The other thing that is a big deal for us is balance. So we have to take our students to just go back to elementary school. What does balance mean to you? Well, I don't know what it means to you. So come in, and if I notice that you can't have your feet together very close because you're going to lose your balance, now I need to adjust a little bit how your stance is going to be. Or if you have a lady, every step she takes is incredibly painful. Like, you're not talking just a little pain. She is in tears.
Right. Wow.
So her steps are rather slides. She pushes that foot forward, and it's going to be like one foot in front of the other. All right. Now,
right.
She is doing it no matter what, because in her daily life, she can't just stay still. She has to still move around. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that, in that same, subject with balance, I have a lady, she has cerebral palsy. And so for her, it used to be a big deal. When she stands up, she will fall pretty much right after. Okay. So we gotten to a point where she had to learn to accept the fall. Accepting the fall is the biggest thing that I also teach, where if you do go down, instead of trying to fight it, you need to embrace it. And there are certain things that you have to do to protect yourself. So the connection, the balance, and the acceptance. And acceptance is not just the physical acceptance, but most importantly, the mental and emotional acceptance that you're blind or you have a disability. You're actually helpless. You know, you can't move. And from that place, you have to start building your strength.
Okay. So Joshua, you're walking on the street one of these days, and God forbid some dude looks at you and says, hey, I think that blind guy'd be an easy target. I think I'll take his wallet. All of a sudden, you find yourself in a violent situation. How are the martial arts techniques that you've learned going to help you, since obviously you're not setting this up? You're not making a good connection here. You're making a very bad one.
Well, part of it is you know, you might have somebody who's like, hey, you know, they come up and kind of get in your space a little bit, and you maybe take your hand and you put it on their shoulder and it's like, hey, can I help you? And based on even just because, you know, you don't want to start a fight, right? You don't want to see these, you know, especially, you know, it would look really bad. I mean, I'm known in the blind community as being a martial artist. You know, what would it profit me from, like, oh, Joshua Loy, a blind martial artist, you know, beats up bad guy to sends him to the hospital. That, you know, that doesn't look like a good headline. So that hand on the shoulder, that allows me to kind of diagnose it. It's like, oh, you know, I'm just checking in. And maybe they'll back off and they'll leave you alone because they realize you're aware.
Yep.
If they come in aggressively, then there's a way to kind of respond there. They come in closer. Maybe they back off a little bit. Maybe they even start to get more aggressive. You can kind of create that wrist-to-wrist connection that Mario was talking about. As they come in, once you put that hand on that shoulder or you just make the verbal connection, the oral connection there, that allows you to diagnose. And as they come in closer, then you stay in close, and then there are techniques that you can do from beyond that point.
I like that word diagnose. That makes sense to me. And also something you said, they know you are aware. I think that is probably a huge part of this.
you're not caught off guard.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also, too, again, you know, most of us have had the experience. I had a time where I had a very, very sweet elderly woman guide me across the street, and she was very, very, very insistent. She wasn't meaning harm, but she just, and then I waited for her to pass, and I walked, crossed back over the street and crossed the other direction because she guided me across the wrong street. But the point is I need to diagnose that. I need to know, okay, she's really insistent about helping, but she doesn't want to hurt me. And so you know, I'm going to respond to her a lot differently than the guy who's trying to mug me for what I have.
Sure. So part of any art like this, whether it's music or certainly martial arts, is competition. And one of the reasons you guys are with us this week is to talk about something that's coming up on the 28th of this month. Mario, why don't you go ahead and start talking about that just a little bit?
Well, it's basically, this is one of the biggest milestones that we have achieved in our 9 years of existence as a martial arts school. We have now managed to have 4 members that are existing black belts to go to the next level, which is a second degree black belt. And then we have 6 new black belt members, so to speak. They will get their black belt as well. I don't know many schools that actually are geared for people with disabilities that have 10 people going through a black belt test. As a matter of fact, I don't know many schools generally that have 10 people at once going through that black belt test. So that's a huge deal for us. Mm-hmm. It's a 3.5-hour test, which is divided into like basic drills, basic technical drills. We have balance drills. We will have breathing exercises that are displayed. And also all exercises have a physical value in case there is an altercation at some point. We have what we call kata or forms, where there's a set, there's set patterns that usually take about 1 to 2 minutes if you perform it by yourself efficiently, but it's going to take about 7 to 10 minutes with the whole team. And there's about 4 or 5 various patterns that they have to go through. We will have a self-defense portion, which is a big deal. We use a lot of, you know, old school, there's a lot of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu techniques that I'm throwing in there where just people grab their wrist, and we use very, very efficient but simple getaway techniques and manipulation techniques. A large portion of that second part of the test is going to be what we call our fight drills or fight simulation or a choreographed fighting. And that happens to be with an instructor or with one of the senior students that knows what's going on. And for about 2 minutes, the person's trying to hit you, is trying to grab you, you know, try to pull you away. And then the students are required to make their adjustments and show their proficiency in various grips and getaways. And then we have a big, which is a very, very fun exercise, and I don't think Joshua has done this yet, but he's going to appreciate it. He's doing a distance. He doesn't know yet, but he's going to love it. It's a distance management drill that I've started doing with the students, where they use the guide dog actually as like a wedge. So they're always trying to keep the guide dog between them and the attacker.
Interesting.
If they have a guide dog. It's very cool. If they don't have a guide dog, they keep the cane as a sensor or as an extension of their hand, as it always is, between them and the attacker, just so that they can, I like the word diagnose as well, they can diagnose what is the person going to do. So they just need to know what is the up to. The very last portion is going to be what we call a chi test or a break test, where if you're strong, if you have a good fist and you can hit things, you can break things. And if you're a little older, we have things where, for example, I'm trying to bend their arm and it can't be bent. They put all their energy into that arm and it's not going to bend. Or we have a 120-pound lady and 4 people trying to push her away and she's grounded to the floor. So it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
We have some pretty cool guests coming too.
The guest is the... This is the
pretty cool part.
The Grandmaster Robert Coutreau. He is the founder of the Shangido organization. He comes with his lovely wife, Nancy Cottrell, and they will actually participate in the test as evaluators and obviously helping on the floor. He's the head guy of this, what we call the Shangido family, where we are actually registered under. We're so excited to have them. And that gives us basically a chance to not just do a test from me as an instructor is, hey, let's do a little black belt test. We're going to take it to a world stage. We're taking a gentleman who's overseer in multiple schools and who's the head guy, and he can actually get, you know, first-hand impression and first-hand judgment about the ability of those students. You know, then we have a candlelight ceremony, which is really cool, amazing. We have candlelight going. We have the gentleman, Master Kutgal, as well, is going to present the belt and the uniforms, which, by the way, I already have. So this has already been sent to me. I'm so excited, and they take their belt, and there's some sort of oath that they have to say, and it's very traditional. And I've really never had a chance to actually do a candlelight ceremony until like 2 years ago, and I'm sold on it. It's really awesome. That's the test.
And Joshua, for someone who might be thinking about getting into martial arts and they're in your area, go ahead and talk to us a little bit about how to get in touch with you guys, and maybe just kind of give us your thoughts, first of all, on kind of what the benefits of this whole exercise has been for you personally.
Sure. Well, actually, just I'll answer that last portion first. It has been noted on previous podcasts, you know, I train and teach at a school that has primarily sighted students. I've been very fortunate that my other instructor, Master Conway, has allowed me to train there, and he's been pretty good overall. And the techniques and everything have worked for me as my development. There were still some shortcomings that I had in terms of being able to effectively teach other blind people. Because what worked for me, okay, it happened to work out well for me, but I don't know how to teach other blind people. And I've been with Mario for a little over a year now and have been really enjoying learning from him and some of the distinctives there. And even despite my years prior, I've really, really improved my balance and being aware of angles and that sort of thing. So that's really been just in my own personal development as a martial arts, that's been fantastic. If somebody is interested in training with our particular group, at the Blind Community Center, again, it doesn't cost anything. So they don't have to worry about, you know, paying any money or any of that, because martial arts lessons can be very expensive at other schools, and they have been. Just contact the San Diego Blind Community Center. Tell them they are interested in the martial arts or self-defense courses, and maybe we can get a link in the show notes there for the Blind Community Center. Personal website, which people are welcome to contact me at, and I'm happy to direct them, is servantwarrioronline.com. And then Mario has his site, and either one of us would be happy to answer any questions that somebody has about the program.
Well, very good. I would like to thank both of you gentlemen for joining us to talk about a subject that many people probably don't know a lot about, martial arts. So thank you, Mario, for being a part of the program today. And thank you, Joshua, for also being on the podcast.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us online at www.serotalk.com. Send an email to resources@serotalk.com. Leave us an iReport using iBlink Radio, available in the App Store and Google Play. Or call the Blab line at 1-866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.